Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Great to have you tuned in here on Connecting Faith. Welcome. I'm Neil Stavem, and looking forward to this day before Thanksgiving to talk about the subject that's on everybody's mind. Probably, Ted, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Well, traffic, weather, no, food.
Food.
That's right. Yeah,
yes.
So.
Well, as the opening liner says, yeah. Always expect something good on
yes.
your lunch hour.
All right. So we're going to talk today the spirit of food. This is just a wonderful book. It feels sort of rich and warm, kind of like some fresh homemade bread or a great recipe that you maybe hadn't tried before. It includes 32 writers writing on feasting and fasting toward God, and it's edited by our guest today, Leslie Leland Fields. And we've talked to Leslie about this book before and just wanted to get her back on because it's just so valuable to spend some time talking about this important vital part of our lives. We talked food today. Leslie's a writer and an editor and a national speaker who lives on Kodiak Island, Alaska, in the winter, and Harvester Island in the summer, where she joins her family in the commercial salmon fishing business. And she has written a number of great books. Today, we're going to focus on the one that she edited here a couple of years back called The Spirit of Food. She has six children, and they're not going to be hanging out with her at Thanksgiving just because it takes a while to get to Kodiak, Alaska.
Yeah,
for so.
A little deterrent.
It is, but but we are going to talk food. Leslie, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I always enjoy our conversations and have really appreciated looking at The Spirit of Food once again. It's a wonderful resource. And it's interesting, I guess, that, you know, we're talking about food. This is the day everybody's thinking about it, doing a lot of preparation. And in fact, I think I heard our morning show host is saying she'd read something about 18 hours average time preparation for Thanksgiving meal, which is consumed an average 12 minutes. That doesn't sound quite right, does it, somehow?
That's shocking. That's shocking. That's not right. And, you know, now I'm feeling very, very proud because when at our meal, we make it last a long time. And maybe that's just, it takes a long time to pass all that food around. And we probably sit at the table for at least an hour. And I don't, and if any of my kids try to get up, you know, if anybody tries to get up in 12 minutes, they, like, the duct tape comes out and they're, you know, they're going to be taped to that chair.
Yeah. So, well, of course, you have a big family. So when they're all around, and then I suppose when you're in the business, do you have sort of extended workers and everybody there too? So I mean, is it you're doing big meals a lot, probably, right?
Oh yeah. In the summer, we have anywhere from 10 to 14 people at our table every meal, and you know, for holiday meals. I don't even know how many people are coming tomorrow. I think it might be 20, but I haven't heard back. We just decided about 3 days ago that we were going to be here in Kodiak after all for Thanksgiving, and all the people who have family were already claimed. So we just kind of looked around for all the orphans, and you know, there are a lot of orphans out there who don't have family or friends to eat with. So we're gonna be a merry band together tomorrow.
You don't sound sort of nervous or stressed about that. So 18 or 20 doesn't that you know. It doesn't really bother you if they show up or not, right? You'll just be prepared?
Oh, no, it doesn't bother me. I really, this is, over the holidays and Christmas too, I just love opening my doors, and that's really the joy of it, Neil. It's, you know, my family, I love my family, and I want my family there, but but maybe I'm just greedy. It's not enough. I want a lot of people, because that's where the celebration and the joy is to bring joy to others, and to and love is the more people at your table, love kind of multiplies along with it.
Well, Leslie, the one of the things that you address early on in the book is food as a gift from God. And it's interesting. It seems like in this culture, we're pretty fascinated with food. I mean, there's the cooking channels, recipe books, what's the latest appliance. And yet it seems like maybe we're missing the bigger picture, that food's a gift from God. You talk about food as sacrament. Just say more about that.
Yeah, and that's, really the whole book, The Spirit of Food. I was going to say it takes a whole book to answer that question. But food is holy. And you're so right. Our culture is just fascinated with food. And in some ways, we're sort of, we're gluttonous about food. We can't seem to watch enough cooking shows or buy enough kitchen appliances. And I understand that food is interesting. It is fascinating. It's one of our primary appetites, right? We die without food. God made us that way. So all of this is good, but we're missing so many times in all of those shows and cookbooks and talk about food, we're missing the most essential element of all, and that is that food really is holy. It's a gift from God to every one of us, and it's holy, it's sacramental. And let me read a couple of verses that just, when I discovered these verses in the scriptures, I was just blown away. For some reason, I never saw them, but it's the end of the book of Zechariah, and that's one of the minor prophets. Maybe that's one reason right there. We're not in the minor prophets too often. But these are the last verses of the whole book of Zechariah. And listen, this is an image of heaven. So God's giving us, we're given many images of heaven, but here's an image of heaven right here. On that day, holy to the Lord will be inscribed on the bells of the horses, and the cooking pots in the Lord's house will be like the sacred bowls in front of the altar. Here's the key verse. Every pot in Jerusalem and Judah will be holy to the Lord Almighty. And all who come to sacrifice will take some of the pots and cook in them. Don't you love that idea?
Wow.
That the pots, the very pots that we cook in, are holy to the Lord in heaven. And I think it is my contention, Neil, that our pots right now and our kitchen cupboards are meant to be holy to the Lord.
We need to chew on that a little bit, don't we? The entire scripture is full of feasting, from beginning to end, right?
It's a Revelation. It is. It is a central theme. One of the very first words that God speaks to Adam and Eve is about food. This is, all of this is for you for food, and dress and keep the garden. Of course, the garden was also a supplier of food to them, and God gave them everything that he had created. He said, all these fruits and vegetables, these are all for you, for your food. And there's only one thing that he withheld, one food item that he withheld. And doggone it, didn't they just have to go for that?
We've misused food a fair amount. I think all of us would admit to that. In fact, one of the columnists, I don't know if you'd call them essayists, I guess you'd say, in the book The Spirit of Food, Lauren Winter, who I so appreciate her writing as well, talks about a right relationship with food points us toward him. Yeah. And thinking that there's dangers in not taking time to maybe eat and enjoy our food in the proper way.
Yeah, and I think just to go back to the Garden of Eden again, I think we all have a choice. See, the choice is we can eat like Adam and Eve, or we can eat like Christ. And Adam and Eve decided that they were going to feed themselves. They decided they were not going to eat the food that God had provided, though he had given them every good thing. And they had decided to go beyond what God had given them to eat what they wanted to eat, you know, that forbidden fruit. Contrast that with Christ, eating like Christ. Remember, I mean, every time they show him in the scriptures eating, we see him, you know, picking up that loaf of bread, picking up that fish or whatever, and the first thing he does is he raises his head to the skies and says, you know, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. And he recognizes that everything that is given to him is from God. And so he thanks God first before he eats it. Adam and Eve, when they went to that tree to feed themselves, they did not thank God for that food. They violated, right, God's command and grabbed that food because they didn't trust God. They didn't trust that God was feeding them well enough. So we see that even in the way that we eat and what we bring to the table and what we bring, even as we're pushing our shopping cart down the aisle, you know, are we eating like Christ with thankful hearts toward God for what he is giving us? Or are we eating like Adam and Eve, not recognizing that this is from God and eating kind of disobediently and without a thankful spirit?
Reminds me that we need to put a little more effort perhaps into our pre-meal grace. Right? It's become sort of a habit. We teach our kids, and for some that may be the only time they actually pray is before a meal, and it's done rather maybe rotely or rapidly. But we have to pause a bit longer, and this would be a good weekend to do that, I think.
It would be a good weekend. And even though, you know, and we're all going to be cooking in a hurry. I know that's true, and I'm going to be one of them. In fact, Neil, okay, here's my confession. I haven't even gone shopping yet for for my food. So that's today, and I know the store is going to be a madhouse. And but even the act of shopping and selecting our food and the act of cooking itself can be done prayerfully, joyfully. There is a chapter, an essay in The Spirit of Food by a man named Robert Farrar Capon, and it's kind of a famous essay. It's called The Heavenly Onion. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Refresh our listeners a little bit more about that. Well, let's use that as a tease because we need to take a quick break, and so we're going to come back and peel back the onion, as it were, with Leslie Leland Fields. We're talking about the Spirit of Food. It's a wonderful resource that helps us understand the joys and the wonder of God's provision for us. 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. We're taking some time just to thank the Lord for all that he provides for us. And talking food today here on Connecting Faith. More with Leslie Fields in just a moment. Day before Thanksgiving, we're taking a moment to be thankful for the reason that most of us get together over Thanksgiving to enjoy a wonderful meal. And so if you're in the business, the kitchen perhaps right now, or you're on the road heading to the store or just doing the preparation, just want to encourage you with the conversation today as we talk with Leslie Leland Fields, who's a best-selling author. She's a writer, editor, national speaker. Written on forgiveness, on wilderness, commercial fishing, parenting, and we're talking about one of the books that she's put together called The Spirit of Food, where she has served as editor for these 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. One of them, who is a lifelong New Yorker, a full-time parish priest, and has written much about food and taught cooking classes, wrote something called The Heavenly Onion, included in this book of essays. Tell us, Leslie, about the heavenly onion.
Yeah. So he describes cutting an onion, the process of cutting up an onion. And he describes it in such exquisite detail. The onion from the dry, papery skin outside, and you know, cutting off the stem end, and then through the layers, and he describes the, you know, the colors of the layers and the smell and the juice and the texture, and this goes on for pages, but it is not boring in the slightest. And in the end of this essay, he says that the onion, you know, becomes this image of heaven. I'm not gonna spoil it, you know, to tell you how. But he has here's his point about that. He says, I'll just read a couple of sentences. Man's real work is to look at the things of the world and to love them for what they are. That is, after all, what God does. And man was not made in God's image for nothing. And he makes an argument for, as we're cooking in the kitchen, as we're, you know, as we slice that purple cabbage, and to look at the whorl and the imprint, the utterly unique imprint of that cabbage, as we slice the onion, we're tasting, we're smelling, we're feeling and touching. You know, we're just fully engaging our senses in these things that God has made and given to us for our good and for our life and for our joy. And so often we just chop, 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 throw it in the pan. We're just, you know, I think the average cook spends 30 minutes total out of an entire day preparing food. And there are a lot of people who just, you know, pop things in the microwave. And I understand we're so busy, but we're missing out on the pleasure and the worship experience that we can have while we're preparing our food.
Well, it reminded me, there's also, I guess, the other side is where, you know, we eat, we're not attending to the food that we eat because we're busy looking at a screen, or we're driving in the car or something. So it's one thing to attend to it, engage in it when we're preparing it, but then when we're eating it, we should attend to it as well, shouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, that's such a good point, because we're all guilty of that as well. And I think at the root of it, Neil, we tend to see food as fuel. We tend to see our bodies, and this is so very American, we see our bodies as machines and food is fuel. And just as we take our car to the gas station to fill it with gas, you know, we run through the kitchen or run through the drive-through and buy that burger and cram it down and onto the next thing. And God really intended our meals and our food to be times of, really, it should be times of worship, and times of enjoying the presence of one another, being fed by the presence of one another, being fed by the food that God has given us. See, God doesn't make these divisions. He doesn't compartmentalize us into body, you know, and soul. Okay, food is for your body. You know, the word of God is for your soul. It's all, we are one being. We are body and soul together. And food is meant to feed our souls, our spirits, just as much as our bodies. And it's hard to do that when you're driving through McDonald's, you know.
were you a leader in the slow food movement before it became popular? What are your thoughts about that, the whole idea?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I think the slow food movement is just one of the best things going. And there are a lot of Christians involved in it as well, who are, you know, making all the same arguments and observations that I am. But, you know, Neil, the reason that I wrote The Spirit of Food was because I looked at the slow food movement when it started to begin, and I thought, wait a minute, okay, these are all really good things, talking about, you know, farming organically, healthier food, slowing down the whole cooking process, all of that, but it was missing, the slow food movement was missing an essential ingredient, and that was the whole spiritual component. Food that food is a holy gift from God, and that's why I did The Spirit of Food. I thought I need to enter into this movement and enter into this conversation with a much fuller and deeper perspective.
You were talking about ingredients. I know one of the essays in the book is about family inviting their young adult children in, and they're preparing a meal, and the other kids came in and started watching how this all worked. Cause, you know, a lot of us don't really have any idea how to make a meal from scratch. There's some lessons we can learn to help maybe teach our kids the value of actually making a meal together.
Oh, yeah. And I tell you what, that is just the funnest thing. Get everybody in the kitchen cooking together. And it's a blast. And then you've... You're making memories, and that's the opportunity to teach your children and your friends and their friends what food is about and what food is for, and that even the process of handling it and combining it and adding spices. And, you know, when we do all that, Neil, we are really sort of echoing God's own creativity. We're taking all of these pieces of creation, right, that God has made and given to us, and we are making something new every time. We are creating something new. You know, we're going to take some pumpkin and add some milk and add some eggs from the chicken and these spices that come from that plant over in that part of the world. And we're taking all of these elements of creation and combining and creating something entirely new. And that is just fun. You know, we are recreating, we're echoing God's own creativity with his creation.
Talking today with Leslie Leland Fields about her wonderful book that she's edited called The Spirit of Food. It features 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. And, I mean, this is a time of year when we have to be thinking about food. And even though Leslie hasn't gone shopping yet today, she still has some wise words for us. You know, speaking of kids, were your kids, are mostly grown, I think, now, but were they picky eaters, and how did you work through that?
No.
Okay.
No, they were not picky eaters. So I have six kids. I have two left. The other four are out in the world, and they will be coming home at Christmas, so I'll have everybody home at Christmas. Around our feasting table, but no, they weren't picky eaters. We just didn't allow that. You know, what I fix is what we eat, and everything I fix is, you know, everybody eats it, and you don't get to say, I don't like this. And, you know, no one ever said that at my table. And I think it starts right off when our kids are really little in the high chair. You give them lots of different food. Don't wait and see what they like. Don't cater to their taste. Give them the opportunity to taste and sample all kinds of different foods.
And somebody asked me in the hallway today how I was coming on my white food preparation, because I'm sort of known my Scandinavian heritage that, you know, it's got to be white and bland and all those things. So We're going to see if we can spice it up a little bit, Leslie, in just a moment. We have to take a little break, and then we'll come back. And
okay.
I know you've got you're going to give us some ways to deepen our food lives. And so I want to encourage all those that tuned in today to stick around for that, just to get some great help and encouragement from Leslie Leland Fields, writer, editor, national speaker. And she's joining us today to talk about the spirit of food. Love to have you join the conversation, too. Maybe there's a thought that has come up as you've heard the conversation so far. You can join us at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. More with Leslie Leland Fields in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Yo.
Each hand we hold, gathered round this table, from far and near we travel home.
It's a travel day for many, a preparation day for many others, and tomorrow a day of gathering around the table to celebrate and to give thanks for God's provision. Of which one of those primary provisions is the food that we so richly enjoy day in and day out. We're talking about food today. The Spirit of Food is the title of a wonderful book that Leslie Leland Fields has edited. It features 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. Leslie is a wonderful writer. If you ever have the opportunity to read some of her books, I highly recommend it. She's an editor as well as a national speaker. She lives on Kodiak Island, Alaska in the wintertime and Harvester Island in the summer, where she joins her family in a commercial salmon fishing operation. We haven't talked salmon yet. We'll probably get to that. She writes for Christianity Today. She's on the editorial board there and writes for Books and Culture and has traveled around the country doing speaking. In fact, I think doing was it something at Seattle Pacific? Was that where you're doing some teaching?
You know, I was. Okay. But, I taught there for 6 years, but now I am writing and speaking full time.
Well, we're so glad to have you join us today as we just talk food and the enjoyment that we receive from that. And I know that you've put together, as you speak about this, about some things that ways that we can deepen our food lives. And I thought we should just take some time to reflect on that. I know you've got several things that we could maybe mark down and start applying.
Yeah, I do. And they're really simple things, but they can have a profound impact on our own life and our family life. And the first thing I've talked about already, and I won't spend long on that, but just to slow down when we can and cook more thoughtfully, even prayerfully. And we talked about slicing the onion, you know, just take a minute to look, to smell, to taste and touch and this marvelous, fruits and vegetables and meats, all these things that God has given us. So just give yourself even a few more minutes as you cook and allow yourself to pay attention to the food in your hands as you're cooking. And the next one is something we all know, but we don't often do, and that is to invite the hungry to your table. And this isn't something, you know, we need to be limited to holiday feasts for. And there's this wonderful teaching that Jesus gives us in Luke, you know, when he says, when you give a lunch or a dinner, don't invite your friends, your brothers, your relatives, although that's good too, or your rich neighbors, because they might invite you back and you'd be repaid. When you host a banquet, invite those who are poor, maimed, lame, or blind. And I think we get his point, right? Invite people in who are needy, and maybe they're physically needy, maybe they're literally hungry, or maybe they're spiritually hungry. Maybe they're hungry just to be in the company of people who value them. So open your doors and invite the needy to your table. And that's something we're all commanded to do. The next one is another simple little thing that can have a profound impact, and that's grow or harvest some of your own food as you can. And I mean, even just having a little herb garden in your window box, just to participate in the growing, you know, in the growing of some kind of food. Or go out, you know, in the summer you can go to a field of strawberries, pick your own. For us, it's, you know, we go out and get our fish, we get our own fish and we pick our berries and we go out and we hunt our and get our deer. But participate in some way in the gathering of your own food. And I guarantee you, even those small acts help you to connect more deeply with that food as a gift from God. We push our cart down the grocery store aisle and we're pulling cellophane packages into our cart. It can be hard to remember, okay, this food is from God, because it looks like it's from Safeway,
yeah,
you know, or it looks like it's from, you know, General Mills. So if we can get out, walk upon the earth and pluck some apples from the tree ourselves, I guarantee it makes eating and cooking a much more profound experience. The next one is to find, and Neil, please jump in.
Oh,
here.
I'm writing them down, thinking, yes, this is. I want to make sure I'm doing all of these. So we're talking about slowing down, inviting the hungry, and growing your own. Let's talk about the next step to deepen our food lives.
The next is to find or create foods that have spiritual significance. Here's the thing. when we see people eating and feasting in the scriptures, and we look all through the Old Testament, we recognize God created these meals as acts of remembrance. Think about the Passover meal, right? Which, of course, for us is communion. That meal is to help us remember. We are reenacting the death and the resurrection of Christ. And the feast days in the Old Testament are all about remembering. And so if we could find ways to create foods that help us remember. So let me give an example. At Christmas time, I have a special meal that I've devised, and I have pasta, green pasta, and white pasta, and I call it hay and straw to remember the, that Christ was born in a barn. And I have what I call babes in swaddling clothes, and it's, you know what it is? It's little sausages. Sure. with dough around them, you know, it's pigs in a blanket, but yeah. No, it's babes, it's babes in swaddling clothes. But you get the point, right? We can create foods that help us remember what we are celebrating and remember the great acts of God in our lives.
Well, I think too, even though it's not at maybe the spiritual level, but certainly at the relational level, you know, your kids say, you know, Mom, you need to make this, you know, when we come over, we want to have this because this is what we always had. And so those memories are valuable. Food becomes a real a memory bank, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing unspiritual about it that, you know, you got to have green bean casserole because that's what your family always has. And so that, too, so that has significance to your family. It's part of your family's tradition, and so it recalls, you know, all the wonderful celebratory times together. So that's something that everybody can do, is to find or create foods that have spiritual significance.
Leslie Fields is telling us some ways that we can deepen our food lives. We've got partway through this list of eight, so let's continue on.
Okay. All right. Here's another one. Consider beginning some kind of fasting practice. And I think this is really important because it's hard to be grateful for food and for feasts when we feast every day. And, you know, and most of us really do kind of feast every day. And Jesus assumed that we would all fast. You know, he said, when you fast, you know, do this. He didn't say if you fast. So I think fasting, and I could talk for a long time about fasting, but I think fasting is really important to kind of reset our appetites and to reset our expectations. And it's good to withhold things from ourselves. And so today, I'm going to eat very lightly, and I may decide I'm just going to drink juice all day, or I'm just going to have bread and water. I want to eat very simply and very lightly, so that by the time I have that feast tomorrow afternoon, I'm going to look at that food. I'm going to look at that food with new eyes and with new appreciation, because I'm going to be really hungry. So it doesn't that make sense that we eat kind of what we want and as much as we want all the time? Well, why don't we pull back from that some of the time? And when we do that, I guarantee you we're going to look at food with just such a deeper appreciation.
I was trying to remember. I think it was one of the essayists was talking about doing a fast. They were doing some study in Russia, I think, or Ukraine, perhaps, and just how, you know, it wasn't a full fast. I think we probably, you know, we get sort of caught up and say, well, we have to, you know, give up all food for 24 or 36 hours. But she was just writing about how, you know, they set aside a few foods and gathered kind of in community to talk about it.
Right, right. And yeah, there's so many different ways to do fast. You can do a fruit and vegetable fast, but the idea is that you're not going to eat whatever you want whenever you want, right? You're going to just put some boundaries up and allow yourself to feel hunger. And I think in America, we're really afraid of hunger. It's okay to be hungry for a day. And that will open our eyes and just deepen our gratitude for God when we do sit down to that larger meal.
And it's a key part, as you said, that it can be as nourishing as food, right? In terms of the spiritual impact.
Yeah, yeah, it really can. It really can. So, okay, on to the next one. Love your neighbor with your food choices. And I mean this in a couple of ways. When we gather for feasts, many people in America, the majority of people in America, are struggling with weight issues and diabetes and high blood pressure and all of these things. And I know that it's fun to feast and just, you know, throw out all concerns about health, and that can be fine. I myself personally have a hard time doing that. So when I think about loving the people at my table, I want to love them with healthy food. So consider that. Consider what we are feeding the people we love at our tables, and let's try to feed each other food that really is going to bring health and strength. And another part of this is, rather than buying all our produce and meat from the national food chain, if there's a guy down the road who's got who raises organic chickens, we'll support him, because he's taking care of the earth in a much better way than industrial farming. If somebody has an organic garden and produce down the road from you, love that person, love that neighbor, buy that food from them, support these other means of food production that are less harmful to the earth. So in that way, we're loving our neighbor. We're loving the people at our table by feeding them healthier food, and we're loving God's earth by supporting those who are trying to grow food in a healthier, more sustainable way.
There's probably something to be said too, even kind of along that line, that you eat in season. You know, that help we sort of get into the rhythm of you know, God's creative design in terms of how you know, food is growing.
Definitely. So those are some simple ways, Neil, that we can deepen our food lives. And it's not like you have, you know, like, oh, I've got to change everything I'm doing. No, you just start by some of these really simple things, slowing down while you cook. Grow some herbs in your window box, or go pick your own apples. Invite the hungry to your table. Find or create foods that have spiritual significance. Consider some kind of fasting practice, and love your neighbor with your food choices.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll continue our conversation with Leslie Leland Fields. We'll talk a little bit about maybe trusting the recipe. Let me get about and get some of her perspective on that, maybe a bit about baking bread and more. We're talking the spirit of food. Leslie Leland Fields is author of 7 or 8, maybe more books by now, written on a number of areas, from forgiveness to wilderness to commercial fishing to parenting. And the one that we're referencing is one she's edited called The Spirit of Food. It's 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. And there's more to come in just a moment. Stay tuned.
We've come to the time in the season when family and friends gather near to offer a prayer of thanksgiving for blessings we've known through the years, to join hands and thank the Creator now when Thanksgiving is due. This year, when I count my blessings, I'm thanking the Lord He made you.
Every time I hear Johnny Cash, I think my voice really isn't that low, is it? Wow, all right. Leslie Leland Fields is joining us, having a great conversation today, talking about The Spirit of Food. It's one of the books that she has served as an editor on. It features 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. Leslie is a full-time writer and speaker and editor and loves traveling and loves salmon fishing. That's what her and her family does during the summer months. And she's in Kodiak, Alaska, talking with us today. And Leslie, I've just kind of joked about the recipe, trusting the recipe. But, you know, sometimes my kids would often ask my wife, say, is this a real recipe, Mom? Is there some value in following the recipe to the T?
Well, okay, you're asking a terrible person for this, because I am one of those people who sees recipes as suggestions.
Okay.
You know, and I usually look at a recipe, kind of get the idea of it, and then I do my own thing. That's just me. And I find that some people love following the recipe exactly. And actually, I know that's a good thing to do when you're trying something new, right? Because you want to see what they want this to taste like. And so do that the first time. And then after that, you're going to have your own ideas. Oh, no, this needs a lot more paprika. Oh, no, I'm going to use coconut oil instead of butter. You know, and then that's the fun part, is that you get to make things your own.
Do you encounter people maybe that come up to you at a conference or speaking, you know, that don't feel adequate about their culinary capabilities?
Yes. But you know, and they're often the ones who really love recipes, and you know, and they follow the recipe, and that's great. That's a good way to cook, if that's how they feel secure. Then that's wonderful. I think at some point when you've cooked for a while, you begin to recognize patterns and you begin to develop your own tastes, and that's when you start to do a little more freelance stuff. And I think that's where the fun comes in. But, you know, it's really just cook the way it makes you happy, really. That's what I want to say.
Does your husband and kids do their share of cooking, or is that kind of your domain and they just let you work it out?
No, my husband cooks also. He's a breakfast cook.
Okay.
And that started years ago when we had babies and I was up all night. And so we had this deal that I would take care of anything that happened in the night, and then he would get up in the morning and fix breakfast and get the kids ready for school. So that served us well, and we still do that. He's still the breakfast cook. So and my other kids, yeah, they do cook. I have a daughter and five sons, and my sons, who are on their own, three of my sons are on their own, they all love salmon, and they all cook salmon. That's probably one of their big, you know, best meals is salmon.
Well, before our time runs out, any tips on how we should prepare salmon? Do you have a favorite way of doing that?
Oh, shoot. I was afraid you were going to ask me that. Because I cook it probably 50 different ways. One of my favorites is just to kind of poach it in a white wine with, you know, garlic and butter and dill. You know, it's really hard. It's hard to beat that. It's so moist and just kind of melts in your mouth. But I love salmon Alfredo, you know, in an Alfredo sauce, and over homemade pasta. I love that. I also love just a good salmon bisque, you know, with a tomato cream base. Soup. So that's 3 out of 50.
Yeah. Right. Okay. There. All right. Good. Well, we're thinking, because you know the turkey will be done, and then we're going to look for something else for the rest of the weekend. I mean, a few leftovers, but so we may consider the salmon bisque. That sounds pretty nice. So Ted, you ready to eat?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready to
all
know.
Right. So, Leslie, thank you so much for just taking a little time to talk food with us today and talk faith and to celebrate the God who provides it all so richly for us to enjoy it. And we just enjoyed having a conversation with you today.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me. You guys are, you're making me hungry talking about all this. I'm going to, after I hang up, I'm going to run out to the store and start getting everything ready here. And I just wish everyone who's listening, just the most wonderful, love-filled, worshipful Thanksgiving Day tomorrow.
Amen. Leslie Leland Fields, we're talking about The Spirit of Food, one of our great books that's called, the subtitle is 34 Writers on Feasting and Fasting Toward God, joining us today on Connecting Faith. Well, we've got a couple of minutes before the program time is up, and we're taking time each day to talk about Angel Tree. It's a partnership with Prison Fellowship that we're so excited about, and an opportunity for us to have an impact and see lives changed. You know, your gift of $73, for example, will help reach 5 children with a Christmas gift, the gospel, and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. And as you listen to the story, think about how you could impact and change a life.
The most passionate Angel Tree volunteers are those who have themselves been rescued. Do you know what it's like to absolutely hit bottom? Antonio remembers.
When I was incarcerated, my children felt like daddy left them. Daddy didn't care about them. They were left back with their mom struggling because I cared more about drugs than I did about them.
Back home, Alicia wanted and expected nothing from Antonio. This was his 4th time back in prison, and she thought no power on earth could save him.
If you'd have known him 10 years ago, you wouldn't want to be in the same room with him. He was a very scary person. He was very violent and very selfish. And when God broke him, he broke him.
God visited Stateville cell T-235.
God came when I was in prison in Stateville in cell T-235. Is the first time that I met Jesus Christ. As soon as I got a taste of Jesus, that sweet, sweet taste of Jesus, is when I began just trying to serve the Lord. It's not about me at all anymore. It's about Jesus. It's about my wife. It's about my children.
Antonio and Alicia know desperation, but they also know restoration. Their pastor asked them to head up Angel Tree for their church. That first year, they stretched their resources and decided their little church in the middle of a crime-ridden, drug-infested neighborhood could reach out to 10 children.
We asked for 10 children's names, and we got them. And I was just curious at how many more children there were that weren't taken. And I was told that there were 75 other children that were on the list for Angel Tree, and no church had taken them.
We can celebrate 10 children being remembered, but we can't ignore 75 children denied. For Antonio, it was especially troubling. He knows what Angel Tree means to an incarcerated parent.
That's a very big thing in prison, to be able to fill out the application in hopes that some kind person, they're going to give from their heart. And that gift is not coming from them. It's addressed with my name on it. And Angel Tree is a worthy cause.
Will you partner with Alicia and Antonio in this worthy cause? Can you help bring Christmas and the sweet love of Jesus to 1 or 2 Angel Tree kids?
Well, you can do 1 or 2, or maybe you could do 10. You know, $146 would help reach 10 children. $73 will help reach 5. They get a Christmas gift. They get the gospel message and a message of love from their incarcerated parent. If you'd like to be involved, you can go on our website at myfaithradio.com. There's a link there. You can make your gift online at myfaithradio.com. Or you can call this toll-free number, 855-59-ANGEL. 855-59-ANGELS, 855-592-6435.
We'll have a great Thanksgiving tomorrow, Neil. Are you hosting?
You. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. The gang's all coming over.
Oh, good.
So there's preparation going on now. We're excited about that opportunity.
Yeah. Same with me. The fridge is totally packed right now. You can't get anything in here.
So. In fact, we're looking at other options in the fridge. You know, the weather's a little warmer than we anticipated for to be able to put stuff away.
Yeah, you don't have nature's freezer.
Apparently not today. So, well, you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening, and your ongoing support of Faith Radio is so appreciated. By the way, if you missed part of the conversation today or would like to just hear it again or maybe pass it on to a friend, you can always find our interviews. We post them online on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. And, of course, all our our audio posted up there is shareable, so pass it on to a friend and tell them about the good news available every day here in Faith Radio. Happy Thanksgiving.